Hello, and welcome to this ninth episode of Season 5 of The Dark Money Files, in which we shine a light into a murky world. I am Ray Blake, and with me is my co-host, friend, and business partner, Graham Barrow. Hello, Graham.
Hello, Ray.
Now, Graham, following hard on the heels of our FinCEN Files special, the UK government has just published its annual review of the Suspicious Activity Reports, or SARs, filed here in the UK during 2019.
I know, Ray. A very useful addition to our understanding of the situation.
We should begin, as ever, I think, with a brief explanation of what a SAR is and isn't, and why you would file one.
I think that's a great idea. And Ray, given you have had far more practical experience than me in this area, why don't you kick off?
OK, I will. The NCA's own definition of a SAR is that a SAR is a suspicious activity report, a piece of information which alerts law enforcement that certain client or customer activity is in some way suspicious and might indicate money laundering or terrorist financing. And that's all in quotes.
Wow. And that word suspicion that came about two-thirds of the way through that sentence, now that can cause all sorts of issues, can't it?
Yes. Less helpfully, the NCA doesn't define suspicion as it relates to SARs. It says suspicion is not defined in legislation. However, some reporters reflect on the Court of Appeal case, the Crown and De Silva 2006, in which the judge defined suspicion as, and I'm quoting again, a possibility which is more than fanciful that relevant facts exist. And it goes on to note that a vague feeling of unease would not suffice.
Oh, okay. Is that it?
The NCA goes on to say it's always a matter for the reporter to decide at what point the threshold is crossed and a disclosure to the NCA is made. It is not for the NCA to comment upon what circumstances should or should not be deemed suspicious. Red flags for suspicious activity should have been discussed during your firm's AML training.
And Lord knows we've discussed a few of those in our podcast, haven't we, Ray?
Oh, yes.
But I'm not sure that's entirely helpful, but never mind. Let's move on to what this suspicion needs to relate to.
Well, that's slightly more straightforward because that's contained in the relevant acts. For example, in the UK, the Proceeds of Crime Act. The NCA says that as soon as you know or suspect that a person is engaged in money laundering or terrorist financing, you should submit a SAR as soon as is practicable. You must decide whether to submit the SAR under either POCA, the Proceeds of Crime Act, or TACT, the Terrorism Act, depending on the nature of your knowledge or suspicion and on a case-by-case basis.
Terrific. And Ray, just to finish off this primer, what does it mean when they say, for example, engaged in money laundering?
Well, that's a very good question, Graham. Under POCA, there are three offences of money laundering. First, there is concealing, disguising, converting, transferring or removing criminal property.
Well, that seems fairly straightforward. Next.
Arranging or facilitating the acquisition, retention, use or control of criminal property by or on behalf of another person.
Yeah, now that seems very relevant to our world, doesn't it? And finally.
Acquiring, using or possessing criminal property.
Well, that doesn't really need any further comment. Should we say a brief word about what constitutes criminal property?
Yes, why don't you give us that brief word?
OK, well, once again, the NCA does give us a definition, which is, quotes, this is any property which derives from a criminal act if the alleged offender knows or suspects that it constitutes or represents such a benefit. But they do, Ray, add a very significant rider to that definition.
Which is?
I'm going to quote again, and it's quite a long quote, so bear with me. It's also important to understand the legal concept of fungibility, great word, where a relatively small amount of criminal property can taint the whole of the asset or assets. For example, if illicit funds are paid into a bank account that contains legitimate funds, then the act of pooling the money in the account may result in the totality of the funds in the account constituting criminal property for the purpose of money laundering offences. If necessary, consideration ought to be given to seeking legal or regulatory advice on such matters.
Yes, and not everyone is aware of that.
Which is why I thought it was worth including it.
We do the hard work, so you don't have to.
Exactly.
Shall we move on to the report then?
Well, yes, let's. Now, as ever, the report starts with the headline figures or the executive summary, whichever way you want to call it. So, Ray, away you go.
Okay, this is going to be a bit number heavy. During 2019, the FIU received 478,437 SARs, which was another record. Of those, 34,543, or just over 7% of the total, were Defence Against Money Laundering SARs, which was an increase of more than 52% compared to the previous year. And according to Ian Minot, head of UK FIU, speaking on a recent webinar, the figures for 2020, with a month still to go, are these. The overall numbers are up another 20%. But within that, the Defence Against Money Laundering numbers are up 80%. And more than 171 million has been frozen, denied to criminals so far this year.
Interesting. And we might want to talk about why that is in a minute or two.
Yes, but first, should we explain that a Defence Against Money Laundering SAR, or a DAML, as they're called, is one where the filer is reporting an in-flight transaction rather than retrospectively and needs the FIU to provide a defence should the transaction subsequently turn out to be criminal in nature?
Or it provides the FIU, of course, with the opportunity to instruct the bank to freeze the transaction pending them taking further action.
In a nutshell, yes. There's a bit more to them than that, and there are all sorts of mandatory response times involved. But for the sake of this podcast, I think that's probably enough detail.
I agree, Ray. What else do we know at the macro level then?
During 2019, as a result of DAML requests, 131,667,477 pounds was denied to criminals by the use of restraint orders or using new powers under the Criminal Finances Act, which we mentioned recently in our episode on unexplained wealth orders, but which also introduced a new civil power allowing the freezing of accounts.
Yeah, and I noticed that the headcount at the FIU grew from 80 the previous year to 118 in the year in question, 2019. And Ray, I believe that's increased even further since.
So I understand. According to Mr. Minot, in the same webinar that we mentioned earlier, the headcount since increased again, and it's now in the 120s.
Well, okay. What else of note then is in the main summary?
A couple of things. One is the SARS reform programme, which I think everyone would agree is long overdue, but for which an explanation in detail really falls outside the scope of today's episode.
Yeah, I agree again. And the second thing?
A specific mention of the IT platform in use at the FIU. The report makes clear that it's out of date and in need of replacement. In that respect, they're implementing a six-phase plan for doing exactly that.
Yeah, we'd probably all agree with that as well, wouldn't we? And there's a brief mention of Brexit, which, let's be honest, is certain to have far-reaching consequences, but exactly what they are remain by and large to be seen.
Yeah, absolutely. Shall we dive into a bit more detail?
All right, we both love detail, so let's do it.
Yeah, why not? So let's start off by contrasting the DAML SARs with the Defence Against Terrorism Finance SARs.
It's a shame they're not called Defence Against Financing Terrorism SARs, isn't it?
That would be daft, Graham.
That's very true, Ray. Anyway, it is quite a contrast. 34,151 DAMLs and 392 DATFs. Around 1% of all Defence SARs applied for relate to Terrorism Act filings.
Which I guess is explained in a couple of different ways. I mean, first, a lot of terrorist acts require little or no money to carry out.
Yeah, you're right. And without in any way wanting to sound facetious, it just doesn't cost very much to drive a car or a truck very quickly across London Bridge with a large knife at your side.
I agree. And even when money does flow through the banking system, it's notoriously difficult to identify ex ante, or if you prefer, before the event.
Ex ante. That's the second great expression we've used today after fungible. Lovely. Don't come across ex ante very often either, do you?
No, and you don't come across terrorism financing that looks in any way obvious very often either. I mean, often these can be entirely legitimate funds and not criminal funds at all, just ones that are spent criminally.
Yeah, that's absolutely right. Spot on and well mentioned. The report also identifies those defence SARs which were refused. It's not actually that many, is it?
No, 1,332 DAMLs and 40 DATFs, or if you prefer, around 3% of DAMLs and 10% of DATFs.
Which, on one reading at least, suggests that the DATFs are higher quality, by and large, than the DAMLs.
Because by extrapolation, a refusal to grant the defence means that the transaction was frozen?
Exactly. If you look at the sums captured following refused DAML requests, it's a little over 131 million, whereas the sum seized following granted requests is a mere 51,000 and a few pounds.
Indicating a huge success rate from refused DAMLs.
Yeah, especially as only a tiny fraction of those refused were subsequently granted during the moratorium period.
And there's a very clear case study within the statistics as to why you need to treat headline figures with care.
I think you should explain.
Well, I'll do that. 70 of the DAMLs had moratorium extensions, meaning that the time required by the FIU to investigate was extended. In 12 of those cases, there have been no previous or existing law enforcement investigations.
So we can read from that the SAR was the initiator of the investigation.
Yeah, I think that's a safe assumption. And these 12 cases resulted in the restraint of nearly £25.8 million.
Which presumably would not have been identified any other way. So that's a fantastic success story.
Yes, it is. And well done to the FIU for pointing this out. Before we get carried away with that, that 25 million of that total was from one single case.
Okay, that must have been a heck of a transaction.
But
nevertheless, Ray, these are examples of SARs being the progenitors of investigations and not just adding intelligence to existing ones.
Definitely.
And we should mention one statistic which, disappointingly from our point of view, is about to disappear, and that is the intelligence that was received or made to FIU.net.
Yeah, for those who don't know, FIU.net is a decentralised and sophisticated network supporting the FIUs in the EU, and it allows for the exchange of financial intelligence to support the fight against financial crime.
Except, of course, we are no longer in the EU and will no longer have received or contribute intelligence to the network as far as we are aware at the moment.
Which is a shame, as in 2019 we received 234 requests for information from FIU.net and we in turn made a further 114 requests to the network.
Okay, so bearing in mind that around 95% of all SARs are submitted by banks or other financial institutions, and I suspect, in all honesty, an even greater proportion of the DAMLs, we should talk about the huge increase in DAMLs in 2019 and the even greater increase this year.
And the first thing to mention is overly defensive filing, Graham. We've mentioned before that the level of fines and the reputational damage this does has made firms focus more on being seen to do the right thing, even when the risks are low or non-existent.
Yeah, which may result in some MLROs erring on the side of caution and filing a DAML, even when the test for suspicion is hovering close to or even below the threshold that one might reasonably apply.
Yeah, because the perception is that there's no downside to doing so, and a lot of downside for failing to do so when the situation demanded it.
True. But that's only a downside to the MLRO. There is clearly a downside to the overall filing system if the FIU is inundated with defensive DAMLs that have no real merit and contain little or nothing by way of useful intelligence.
Yeah, I think that's absolutely right. However, the situation has been made worse this year, I think, by the large number of schemes designed to help individuals and businesses through the economic ravages wrought by the pandemic, which have, sadly, also been open to significant fraudulent claims.
Yeah, not to mention a proliferation of scams and wheezes designed to relieve legitimate claimants from some or all of their money.
Exactly. Turbulent times attract the chancers like nothing else, don't they?
They do.
So in a way, we should be at least somewhat heartened by the increase in DAMLs this year, because it does suggest that FIs are being proactive in managing the increased risks that COVID-19 has introduced to the financial system.
I could not agree more, Ray.
OK, so we ought to have a look at the remaining 5% of SARs that aren't filed by financial institutions, but by someone else.
Yes, they come from what are popularly known as, quote, the professional enablers segment, although they don't like that expression, as we know, do they? By which I mean accountants, listers, estate agency and trust and company service providers.
Alongside gambling and high-value dealers, and now art dealers, of course.
Absolutely, yes, absolutely. And it would be very easy to get carried away with excoriating this discrepancy. But without a shadow of doubt, the amount of value moved through the banks in terms of both numbers of transactions and overall value is massive compared to the other reporters. So in one respect, it isn't surprising that they produce very many more SARs.
I agree, but I think it's also the case that banks are much more responsive to the requirements of the reporting regime, largely because the regulatory spotlight has shone on them for so long and so frequently, they're mindful of protecting their reputations.
Yes, absolutely. Although it is equally clear that regulatory fines aimed at the professions, estate agency and casinos have been appearing more frequently and are getting higher in value. So maybe in future reports, we will see that reflected in the proportion of SARs filed.
One to watch then. I think we can safely say that because of the coronavirus, next year's review is likely to be anomalous to some degree, but it will still be a very interesting read. So what's next, Graham?
Well, Ray, first, we ought to note some very helpful feedback we received following our sanctions episode previously, and there are some recent developments we really ought to come back to soon. But we're about to launch our KYC Academy, so I thought it would be an appropriate time to talk about the challenges of KYC, the motivations and needs of the different lines of defence when it comes to learning and applying the firm's policies, and to discuss maybe some of the harder challenges that firms face.
Oh, I'm looking forward to it.